even if the iPad cannot replace a Mac for me, if it can replace a Mac or a PC for a lot of people, then that's something I should be concerned with as someone who makes software. Hello, I'm Radek.
I'm Michael.
And this is the podcast.
A sounding board for interesting ideas and insights. We discuss books we read I want to share with you.
As well as technology and productivity, which is what we do by day working on our app, Nozbe.
Or whatever else comes to mind.
First of all, I wanted to acknowledge everybody who tweeted us or emailed at us after we asked for it in our 100th episode. It was cool to see so many people say kind words about this show.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was actually nice to... And many of the people who tweeted were first time... I saw them first time on Twitter. So it was, first time, that I met them on Twitter, let's say. So it was nice. Very, very cool. Thank you. Hey, keep tweeting on us. We don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. But today we wanted to talk about the iPad.
Yeah, iPad was one of the main announcements in WWDC that we both attended and that we recorded and there in San Jose. And now with the focus of for the new iPad Pro, the iOS 11 features and things like that, many people are again talking about the fact that maybe iPad can be treated seriously and with some respect and be treated as a proper computer.
Right. So far, it seems like you're one of the two people on the internet, there being Federico Vitici, who's like super crazy about using your iPad for everything, like for real work. I think we mentioned this a couple times on the show, but back in the day, I think like 3-4 years ago, way before this was something common, you wrote a book called iPad Only, discussing apps and just ways of working with the iPad for productive uses and not just as a toy or for creative work.
I know I'm a bit crazy with just using my iPad, but as full disclosure, it's not like I don't own a Mac. I have an iMac that we use right now, but frankly iPad is my main computer. I'm doing most of my work on the iPad, in 90% or 80-90%, and when I'm away from home, 100%, because I only take my iPad with me. So I have optimized my work for the iPad, and I've done it. I started doing it a few years back, actually. So not with iOS 11, not with iOS 10, with iOS 6. So pretty far, far away. So before we start the whole thing, because there are several concepts, that drew me to iPad and why I started using only an iPad. First of all, some background. I always liked light devices, light laptops. Like if you would ask me, years ago, what would be the best feature of my laptop, I would say the weight and the battery life. So there were two most important things. So I would buy, for example, ThinkPads that were pretty light when I was before the Mac. And for me, the portability was always important because, hey, we have no office, so I can work from anywhere. So if I can work from anywhere, I don't want to schlep a big, honking laptop. I want to have a light portable device. And it was iPad 3 when it was announced with Retina display, so with Retina screen, that with cellular connectivity, and it was 2012 when I started, when the apps for the iPad started getting serious. So the iPad was already 2 years old, and the apps started being reasonably, fine and reasonably attractive to use, and also as a way to for us at Nozbe to start working on an iPad app, because the one that we had, I didn't like so much. I started, working more on the iPad and just looking if I could, leverage this device and use it more. And when I go out from home, just, work on it.
Right. So at this point, it seems to me pretty clear that one can use an iPad for quite a lot of things. You clearly do. I think that the one guy on the internet who's probably most well known for it is Federico Vitici, who writes a lot mm-hmm. about, you know, working with the iPad. But, you know, to me right now, it's not a question of whether it's possible, at least to some extent. The mm-hmm. question is why? Like, what's so good about the iPad? Why would you make your life harder to try to work on an iPad? Like, why not use a real computer? Sure, it's smaller, thinner, lighter, but so what? Like, the MacBook One is not much bigger, not much thicker, not much more, not much heavier. And it is a real computer. Like, sure, iPad is nice as a consumption device for browsing Twitter, for watching YouTube. But, like, what's the point? What's better about the iPad? That's the thing I want mm-hmm. you and everyone listening to, like, sell me on this idea. Pitch me, why would you make your life so hard for this?
Okay, so first of all, just stop this with life so hard. Actually, it's not that hard. But okay, do you know that usually, I mean, people say usually that constraints are actually good for you, you know, constraints, right? Because constraints like force you to think outside of your box, like get out of the box and think, you know, outside of the box. So that's the first thing, so constraints. And what I realized when I was working on my computer was that I was getting lazy. I was doing things in a not productive way or not optimal way because I could, because the computer, like I wasn't optimizing my work to processes or to the things I was doing, you know, like for example, to scale a picture on the computer, I would just, you know, open the app for photos. I would open the picture there, would, you know, go to a menu to shrink the picture, would shrink it, would save it, and then would put the name and then whatever. It would take me like, you know, 2-3 minutes, you know, let's say. I'm not a big Photoshop, you know, user, but, you know, I knew how to do it and it would take me that much time. And then I realized I was doing many things like that. So, and of course this can be done a little better. You can just have a script that, you know, automatically shrinks this kind of picture to this kind of size and it's done. And if you're doing something many times, you usually should be optimizing, right? And I wasn't. I was just using the computer, and I knew that, you know, how it's done. So I wasn't growing and exploring the computer anymore, because I knew it very well. So it was just easy. So because I can do this like this, I'm gonna just do it like this, right? I'm not gonna learn the new way of doing it because I can't do it like that, and my computer is powerful enough, so there is no way. It's like this thing when you stop optimizing applications because you say, you know, the iPhones are just, you know, twice as fast next year, so why would I optimize for performance if, like, next year is going to be just faster? So why would I, right? So that's the first thing. And because I realized when I started working on the iPad is that I had to optimize that, you know, to blog a blog post, I would have to do this, this, and this, bomb. Right, I would have a process for that, and I had to actually consciously design a process to get the post done. And by doing that, I realized I'm actually doing it faster on the iPad than on the computer, because it's like a strict process that helps me go through it. So it was the first thing, first optimization, and just building on that. I always wanted to be more like, to have everything in the cloud, you know, to be more. To be able to access most of my information from the cloud. I thought, you know, it again, no office, you know, freedom of working from anywhere. I thought it would be actually useful to be like that, to be able to access all the information that I need from the cloud. But because my laptop was, you know, had a very big hard drive, like, I didn't optimize for that. I was like, I have everything on my laptop. Why would I optimize for the cloud? Because, you know, like, I would put some of the things on the cloud, but I would just keep most of this on the laptop, and I would have a local backup here. So if I take my laptop anywhere with me anyway, why would I do it, right? So with the iPad, I had to rethink the whole thing. I had to buy the big Dropbox, you know, subscription, put everything in Dropbox, put all my notes in Evernote, put all my, you know, tasks in Nozbe, like, really structure all my clouds, so on my cloud storage, in such a way that I would have to, you know, and because otherwise, if I would take my iPad and would go out, I wouldn't have access to certain files. And I need access to certain files. I'm a CEO of a small company, and some people ask me things, and I want to be able to deliver these. So I would cut myself off. So changing to the iPad forced me to go to the cloud, to really set up things, and to know, okay, I have these kind of files here, these kind of notes here, these kind of tasks here, like the photos here. Like, I would have to structure this. And I never had the motivation to do it because my laptop was so powerful and could handle anything. So why would I?
Right. But when you're talking about workflows or you say consciously design a process, mm-hmm. do you think that this is how like normal people think of using an iPad? Like I get that out of constraints of the iPad versus the more... kind of versatile, powerful ways you can just move things, files, whatever, between apps on the Mac, especially like before iOS 11, before iOS 9, etc. This was the way to do it, to use, for example, apps like Workflow and, you know, your editorials and whatnot to like create, design a process to like move from one step to another to achieve a complex task. But I understand that the constraints force you to do it, but like I don't think that like iPad is people talk about the iPad as a computer as a simpler computer, and this does not sound simpler. This sounds like a nerdy way to approach a problem, which is good. Like I understand that.
No. Okay, so now you're talking about workflows and stuff, and this is new. I mean, when I was in 2012, when I was switching to iPad, there were no workflows. There was no workflow. There was no way to automate things.
All right, so what do you mean by design the process then?
So the apps that I started using. So I was using certain apps for different things. So, for example, to publish a blog post on a computer, I would have to go through several apps. I would write on one of the apps to write, then would copy this text somewhere else, then would move it somewhere else, then would upload the picture from somewhere else. Like I would use several apps and several steps on the Mac to get the blog post done. Like let's keep with this example. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm sure there are better examples, and there are examples in my book, the iPad Only book, which is pretty old now, pretty dated, but it's still relevant. And on the iPad, I found an app where I could just write the blog post, publish from there. It would the process would be straightforward. To write the blog post, I would go to this app, write the blog post there, publish from there. Everything would be like contained in this one thing. So it was really easy for me. It didn't require additional steps because this one container, like this one app, would just serve the purpose.
So what you're saying is that on iOS, instead of like bigger monolithic apps, you'd have a large number of like smaller, more focused apps so that like you could mix and match smaller pieces to get whatever you need to get done, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. So, and again, built on that, what I liked about the iPad, especially in iOS 6 days even, there was no split unit, anything. There was just one app at a time. And one app at a time, at this moment in my life, especially, was really like good because I didn't have to worry about window management and things like that. I would just open the app, write. Open the app, mind map. Open the app, write and I would just do one thing at a time. And I was laughing that I actually was always using two computers at a time. I had my iPhone and my iPad, so my iPhone was like my second screen, and iPad was my main screen. But what I remember from starting there was the fact that thanks to the fact that it was one app at a time, I felt more productive because I got more deep work done. The deep work that we discussed in the previous episodes, I could focus more because with the Mac, and especially if you have a big screen, you have Twitter here going here, these things going here, these going here, Slack, whatever. So things are coming at you, and because you have a big screen, there's no problem to put all these windows there. And of course, you can do that. You can force to close the windows or do different tricks. On the iPad, these tricks were built in. There was no other way to put a different window. There was just one app at a time. And this was really helpful. It was tremendously helpful when I started. And now with split screen, what I like about the new iOS and the iPads is you can still use two apps at a time, or even sometimes three now with iOS 11, or you know, three and picture in picture, but still it's pretty constrained and pretty limited. Which limits your focus, which limits your temptation for distraction. And for me, this was really, 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 really tempting. You know, one app at a time. You open this app, you do this thing. You know, like more focused work, more deep work, and less distractions.
I mean, from the perspective of iOS 11, it kind of makes sense because I haven't used it much yet, obviously, but the kind of quote-unquote window management system, though no one wants you to call it that on iOS 11, is a really cool trade-off between power, as in having multiple things at the same time, but without what you're saying, the constant distraction and the complexity of managing overlapping windows. So I appreciate that, but you know, you've said about how it's great that you get this focused environment, you know, before iOS 9 where you had split screen. And you know, you're saying that at that point in your life it made sense for you, but it sounds like just being apologetic about the iPad. When it didn't have split screen, then oh, it's so good that it's so simple and so focused. But then, like, once we got those things and we got to the point where we are now in iOS 11, like, you can see that it's clearly better to be able to see multiple things and interact between more than one app at a time to achieve a more complex task, which is what you could always do on the Mac.
Not really. So, hold on. I'm not Federico Viticci, who uses his 13-inch iPad Pro with split screen all the time. Actually, if you have a 13-inch iPad Pro, there is no other way to use it. You have to just open two things at the same time, because otherwise there's too much white space. So, right. So that's him. But if you see me using my 10-inch iPad, then 9.7-inch iPad, and hopefully tomorrow I'm going to pick up my 10.5-inch. When you see that, what you see is that most of the time I still use one app. Most of the time I still use one app to get things done. I have, just yesterday I was designing a mind map for my presentation. When I open Keynote, I usually open Keynote and prepare the presentation on the Keynote. And sometimes when I need stuff, so I need reference and I need things like that, then I just pull out the split screen, use the split screen for a while, but then get back to the one app at a time. And still use the iPad as one major app that I use. And then this additional app, sometimes if I need it, if not, I take it out and stay with the main app. So for me, the paradigm of having one app at a time is still valid. With split screen, it's just more convenient because I can access several new things and several additional things. So some things are faster and easier. Before that, as I said, I would just put my iPhone next to my iPad to be able to see the second screen, you know, to have something else on the second screen, like reference material, you know, other browsing sessions, websites. So I would use my iPhone as the second screen to my iPad. Now I don't have to do that. I can have a split screen, so I have like an iPhone just on the same screen. But still, the way I use the iPad is mainly using one app at a time.
Mm. So it really does come down to what you say, constraints being advantages in disguise. That to put it in a more controversial way, that the Mac is too powerful for your own good. Like, you know, overlapping windows being powerful because you can, you know, see multiple stuff, but they just end up keeping you distracted because they actually, you know, the power they provide is rarely what you actually need, and the default thing just keeps you constantly distracted with visuals, with, you know, blinking things, with Twitter in the background.
No, really, when you see me work here in my home office, where I have an iMac with an external monitor, so I have two monitors, you know, a smaller and the iMac, and then I have my iPad, and what you will see is that if I want to manage several things at once, I open the, I use the iMac for some things, for some windows and everything, but if I want to get focus work done, I just take the iPad and go away and just use the iPad, or just even in front of my iMac, I just use the iPad, like for my mapping, for writing, for things like that. I just prefer this focused, condensed, constrained environment to get things done.
All right. So constraints are advantages in disguise. Forced you to consciously design a process, so smaller, more focused apps, and forced you to move to the cloud, which has its own benefits. What else?
Yeah, I'll keep coming. Okay, so one of the things I discovered when using the iPad was that the keyboard actually is optional. So we nerds like the keyboards. We like the keyboard shortcuts because, you know, like the Command C, Command D, Command Shift, you know, Z, whatever. Like, we use the keyboard a lot. And there are people, I'm not one of them, but there are people who can practically manage the whole Mac on the just using the keyboard without even touching the touchpad. But what I realized is that on the iPad, I mean, anyway, with kind of work that we do, the keyboard is really optional. So very often keyboard is in the way. And keyboard forces us to write more or to just use keyboard more when we don't have to. And for me, having the iPad, using the iPad, very often I would use it not in a horizontal way, like when you do, when you have the smart keyboard connected, but vertical way. It was just nicer for me to read and nicer for me to interact with the content. And also still, while just, you know, consuming the content, also working on the content. But just, you know, when I was correcting the text, like whenever, for example, when I was, we were doing Proactive Magazines, whenever my favorite part to do it on the iPad was that I had the whole Proactive Magazine, like I was reading vertically. I had my keyboard disconnected, and I was just, you know, when I had to correct something, I would point it there, write something quickly, correct it, but then the keyboard would vanish and I could keep scrolling, keep reading. It was just nicer experience to have the keyboard only optionally popping up, but using the buttons, you know, the commands, you know, all these things that, you know, the apps provided, the iOS apps provide, to interact with content, you know, to interact with what's happening on the screen. It was just more fun to use. And I remember, so now I'm a little bit disappointed with the smart keyboard. On one hand, I really love it for the iPad Pro. On the other hand, I really liked previously to have the Logitech keyboard, which would enable me to put my iPad in a vertical way. Because writing in a vertical way was just so much fun. Because like, it was just like we are used to the books or paper. Paper was normally vertical when you would write it or read it or whatever. So for me, writing on a vertical screen was even more joy. Like it made more sense. In the era where the laptops were getting wider screens, I had a vertical screen, which was just contrary to the, you know, to the trend, and was just joy to use. And it is joy to use. Now with the split screen and with the smart keyboard, I got used to having the iPad also in a horizontal way. Although when I write longer texts, I use here in my home office, I put the iPad vertically. I have a stand here for that, and I use the Logitech Bluetooth keyboard to type if I want to write something. So anyway, interacting with the screen, being able to rotate the screen and interact with what's happening on the screen in a vertical way and horizontal way, so both ways, and without the burden of the keyboard, was just more fun to use. Was more fun, and I realized that very often in my work, because this is my work. So my work consists of writing stuff as well, giving feedback to people. But giving feedback to people was very often not giving feedback by writing a lot of paragraphs, but actually pointing out things. So, you know, annotating things and sending them back. So was reviewing texts. So for all these kind of workflows, like reviewing, giving feedback, giving visual feedback, iPad is just perfect because I can write on the screen. I can, you know, annotate on the screen. I don't need the keyboard so much. I got lots done by just having this simple interaction with the screen, with the touch screen. And that's why for my type of work, it was just perfect.
All right. The thing about annotating makes a lot of sense. Like it's very unnatural to do on a Mac, and it's just perfect on a large touch screen. But otherwise, I'm not getting this argument that you said that keyboards are really not that necessary, that it's like it's in the way. Like how so? Most of what we do, I feel like, is in writing. I mean, obviously, I write a lot of code, but that's different. That's something iPad cannot handle and will not be able to handle for at least a while. But you do a lot of writing for the blog, for the books. We both do a lot of writing for like design documentation, collaborating asynchronously.
Okay.
In Nosby via comments, in Slack, like there's so much writing in what we do. And that's one thing where the iPad falls short because, you know, by default, it only has an on-screen keyboard, which is not as fast. You can have the smart keyboard, which is way better, but still not as good. I mean, you even acknowledge when you're in your home office, I suspect that you'll probably find, as I did, that it's most comfortable writing on the Microsoft keyboard.
Several things. When I give feedback on the iPad, so first of all, I was very skeptical about writing on the iPad initially, until I got an app called Tap Typing, which was like an app to teach you to touch type on the screen of the iPad.
Oh, sure, I can do that as well, but it's not nearly as good as writing on a real keyboard.
Yeah, but you know, it's I'm like 20% slower than normally, so than on the normal keyboard. So it's not a big deal.
Did you measure that?
Yes, I did. Exactly, yeah, 20%, because I write around 50 something words per minute, so it's not really fast. I'm not really a fast typer. And with 60 words per minute, and then 50 words per minute on the screen. So so it's, you know, I'm like 20% slower, so maybe 25, but you know, it's not like twice slower, right? So what I would do very often, and again, for me, joy to use, have the iPad, for example, browse Twitter. Let's say browsing Twitter or, you know, whatever, doing browsing comments in Nozbe vertically, because it was just, I have more tasks. I think the comment threads are longer, so I would do it in a vertical way. And then if I needed to write a short comment, I would just do it right there with the screen keyboard. It would be slow, but whatever. It's a short comment. But if I wanted to write a longer comment, I would just rotate the screen, write quicker on this bigger keyboard, the bigger on-screen keyboard, pause the comment, turn the screen again, and keep browsing. It was just more fun. And it's just more fun. I mean, you know, once you start using that, it is more fun. I mean, really. And it's the same with my mind maps. When I do mind mapping, it's the same. I usually work on, you know, both horizontal and vertical. I switch whenever, you know, whatever I preferred that moment, you know, which kind of thread I want to see bigger. And when I need to write something, I just add it there and then move things around with my finger. So, yeah, for me, it was just it is just more joy to use, and because the keyboard is optional, as again, you know, when I need it, it's there, but when I don't need it, I have the whole screen for me. So so the last thing was it was a big one for me to switch, and this is a big one for many people, to switch from thinking about files and thinking about apps for these purposes. So we already talked about it, that, you know, more single apps for single purposes, things like that. Now they will be more bound, you know, with iCloud Drive, with Files app, actually, on the iOS 11. So it's going to be more like a computer a little bit. But for me, you know, especially back then, I had to realize that, you know, files are no longer that necessary, or not necessary. They are necessary, but they're not. I'm not creating files. I'm creating output. I'm creating things. Before switching to the iPad, I was really structured with files. I would have folders really neatly done on my computer. I was really careful about, you know, where I would put my files, where I would put my stuff. But I realized that by leveraging the apps, I can have access to the information actually faster. So for example, with Evernote, I quickly switched to Evernote because whenever I would, you know, take a picture in Evernote or take a note in Evernote, it would also recognize the text in the picture, for example. So to find that note later, I would just go to Evernote, type the search, and it would be found. And actually, right now, you can even do it on a Spotlight on the iOS. But it was really easy. I knew where it was. I knew how to find it. And I knew, and it wasn't a file. It was a note in Evernote. Just like, you know, there is a task in Nozbe, right? Or a project in Nozbe. It's not a file. It's a task inside this app. And it took me a while. I had to get used to it. Because before that, so, and everything else I would put into Dropbox. So, and gradually I was moving away from using the Dropbox so much because I was, you know, putting my data in this, you know, kind of silos. So that was a little bit different. But I realized that thanks to that, again, we're coming back to this productivity thing, I knew that, you know, to do this, I just open this app and do it there. To do that, for me, it was like a better trigger mechanism, you know, to work. Instead of just having the file, and I can open this file in so many, you know, again, computer was too powerful. I can open this app and this, you know, I mean, come open this file in this app and then this app and then this, you know, like too many choices, you know. And with the iOS and with iPad, I had less choice.
What I understand by this is that the kind of the root point of the hierarchy changed. That instead of starting with your structure of files and then opening it in a certain app, you start from apps, and then apps have their own sandbox with files, and then over time they can interact with like files that are common for all sorts of apps, like especially with iOS 11, where you can have like storage of files that don't fit into one app or in Dropbox, or and then open from there, but it's like secondary.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. So that was that. So it really, like for me, it took me a while to really get to that. But another thing, what I really liked about the iPad is the appification of websites. So very often, whenever we are booking a hotel with my wife, we were booking a hotel with my wife. Now she knows the good way, but she would, even on the iPad, she would open booking.com. She would just type booking.com. And I was like, why would you do that? There is an app for that, right? So for example, I would, like for the traveling, I had all the traveling apps, you know, download it. So I wouldn't go to booking.com website. I would open booking.com app, which I would be logged in there. You know, it just felt good. Then it felt safer, felt logged in. You know, and of course the app leveraged, you know, the gestures, you know, touching, swiping and things like that. So it was just easy to use. And many websites turned to apps. And, you know, of course, you know, just like ours, like Nozbe is for the iPad and it's an app. It's not, you know, you don't go, you can go to Nozbe.com on the, you know, and log in on the Safari on the iPad, but why would you do that if you can just get the iPad app? So it's the same with, you know, with lots of things. So suddenly, instead of going to websites, I was going to apps. So I could really organize my work again. So for example, I would have a travel folder with all the travel apps. I have my travel information in TripIt. I would have my, you know, the Booking.com, Expedia, like Hipmunk, like many different, you know, apps for traveling, and the same for different purposes. So for me, this appification, again, felt more productive and feels more productive because, you know, to book a hotel, I go there. I use this app. I check it out. You know, when it's there, I'm just gonna book it. I have it there, so it's saved in my account, and I can pull it out. You know, even if I'm offline. But so this appification, especially in 2012 when I started using the iPad so much, I was just surprised how many apps there were. And now they're definitely better than they were back then. But even then, I was just surprised that it was just a more straightforward, again, way to use the internet. Like, you wouldn't use the internet by navigate. I mean, I would still use the Safari to navigate to some of the websites, of course. But like, I would just use the apps a lot more to access the internet and not just, you know, through Safari.
Okay, that is interesting. But isn't it just a consequence of the constraints of the iPad in the sense that, like, in many circumstances, I can't see how. Or it can be argued that it's not that much better as doing the website on the desktop. Like the websites on an iPad suck because it's much harder to do a good feeling website for mobile. But it's like, I want to book a hotel. I go to booking.com on my Mac and it's really fast. I don't have to download anything. It doesn't ask me for permissions. I don't have to install some airline app that then just sits there, sends me spam, maybe tracks me in the background. Like, I don't know what it's going to do. It's just like, you go to the website, you do your thing and you exit and it just works and it's fine. And on an iPad, the websites are often a bad experience, so you're forced to go with the application route. But in many cases, sure, I can see that. But for many like things that you do that you don't do so often, so it's not like Evernote or Nozbe, obviously. But like you want to fly somewhere or book a hotel, like is it really that better when you just want to like you know, fly somewhere and you have to download another stupid app?
Well, It depends. It depends on the, of course, on the airline as well. For me, for example, one of my favorite ways to, one of my favorite water coolers was IMDb website, so Internet Movie Database, and their website sucks on any device. It's just really bad. So, and on the, and the iPad app is really nice. So to use it on the iPad was just a blessing. And many apps I discovered are really taking advantage of the gestures, you know, of tapping and also other things. Like, for example, again, with the iPad, what you have is you have your camera with you at all times. Of course, it's stupid to take pictures on the iPad, but it's not stupid to scan documents. So if there was a piece of paper, I could just literally scan it right there and send it right there. Whereas having a piece of paper and the Mac, what do you do now? Like, you know, it's you need a scanner, you know, to actually input this data to the Mac, or I don't know, put it on the FaceTime camera. Well, whatever. So it's like with the iPad scanning and the scanning apps that appeared at that time and that are now are just so useful. So this would again simplify my office and simplify my accounting. I would just scan the documents with the iPad, move it there, and it was done.
Sure, but you could always do it on an iPhone even if you use the Mac. So that's not a big deal.
Speaking of the iPhone, another hidden feature of the iPad is the fact that once you set up things on the iPad, it is all iOS. So basically, you have the same information, you have the same setup or similar setup if you want to on the iPhone. So suddenly you have two mirror computers. So and this is really cool because very often I would catch myself just leaving the home without the iPad. But thanks to the fact that it was all iOS and I have my iPhone with me, I still have access to all my files, to all my notes, to all my tasks. I have access to everything that I prepared. Whereas if you, like, it's really hard to configure the Mac and the iPhone in the same way that you would have, you know, similar things. In you know, having iPad and an iPhone, they are different, but they are very similar. And the apps are, you know, practically the same. And especially the containers, I mean, what they contain. So this was so mind-blowing for me when the iPhone Plus showed up. So when the iPhone 6 Plus showed up, I suddenly started working on the iPhone a lot more because, again, I had the data already there. I had the apps already there, and I had a bigger screen. So sometimes I wouldn't even bother pulling up my iPad if I could do something quickly on the iPhone directly because it was the same setup. So by configuring iPad, by going iPad only, suddenly I have two mirror computers, one with a small screen and one with a bigger screen.
Yeah, that is really interesting. But it seems like a lot of the advantages that you mentioned for the iPad don't really seem that specific to the iPad. It's just that the iPad forced you to adopt things that might just be better anyway, regardless of whether it's the iPad and a Mac. And I will agree that a lot of things, good things, have started on iOS, but there was no reason not to do them on the Mac. And so it happened. So moving stuff to the cloud, I mean, obviously Dropbox have been there for a long time, but Apple has done a lot of work to encourage apps to store things in the cloud. They made iCloud Drive accessible through Finder. In Sierra, they made it possible for you to sync your desktop, your documents with iCloud Drive, which makes them available everywhere, including your iOS devices. There is a trend of like smaller, more focused apps. There is an app store, though. The Mac App Store is not
ideal.
It's not ideal. Let's just say, but it just seems that a lot of those things are not really iPad related. They happened on iPad first for historical reasons, or you know, just because it was first, or just because it's the new thing. But it's not that it makes iPad that much better when the same thing exists on the Mac. It's just you had to make the switch anyway. It's just that the iPad forced you to make the switch, whereas the Mac didn't, but it didn't mean that you couldn't adopt the new thing. And there are more things that frustrate me because they make the iPad look better kind of unfairly because the Mac could also take advantage of them. We talked about LTE last week.
Exactly.
Why aren't there Macs with LTE? Like, sure, right now that's a thing that's definitely better about the iPad, but it's almost artificial. Like, it's artificially making Mac worse as a kind of mobile device. The MacBook One is, sure, not quite the iPad in terms of like physical dimensions and whatnot, but it's so light, so portable as a Mac, very, you know, approaching iPad, smaller than the 13-inch iPad Pro, but it doesn't have LTE, but it could have. And another thing is, I've been wishing for years that Apple makes a common UI toolkit for the Mac and for iOS, so that so many more apps that are on iOS could be very easily ported to the Mac. And then you would have the advantages of the Mac, or what I will argue are the advantages, but also have the thing of apps syncing together between your devices, which is obviously a good thing.
Yeah, so again, you touched on a very, very nice thing. So first of all, yes, in my recent article that I just posted on my blog, I recommend getting the LTE, so the 4G, whatever, cellular version of the iPad, because this magic of pulling it out and being online right then, you know, without tethering, without searching for Wi-Fi, asking the cafe owner if they have Wi-Fi, and then give you this stupid password. Like, none of that. You just pull it out, you are online, just like with the iPhone. So this is magic. This is like you have the computer online all the time. And now with the True Phone, which they have this, you know, this kind of Apple SIM or whatever you call it, you can set up the account, the data plan, in one country and use it in any country in the world. So, and no roaming charges, nothing like that. So it's really, really amazing. So that's really cool with the iPad. And as you said, many good things from the iPad were ported back to the Mac, or could be ported back to the Mac. And you're totally right. Then some of the things that I mentioned, or most of the things that I mentioned today in this episode, are just plain good routines to follow anyway, like good things to do anyway, right? Like limiting yourself right to one app at a time, you know, distractions, and like many of these things are just good things anyway. But kind of iPad forced me to do them. But again, I would like to highlight this one. Really, the touch interface and having the iPad, being able to rotate the iPad to vertical, horizontal, depending on what I'm doing, is just so much more fun. And having this and iPad being this light device that you can put in a small messenger backpack and carry anywhere and just, you know, use it anywhere really without actually feeling any additional, you know, weight, this is the fun part of the iPad, and this is like this additional appeal that convinced me to start, you know, being iPad only. So yes, the good things, you know, the constraints, I mean, the, all these good, you know, habits, yes, but also the fun part, the touching, the screen, the additional sensors, you know, the GPS, the you know, the photos, the, like, all these things that just make it just a joy to use. And yes, a Mac is also a joy to use. I don't say it's not. But for example, if you're reading something longer on the Mac, you are in this awkward position with this keyboard in front of you, you know, you look with the screen, and reading it on the iPad in a vertical way, you know, lifting it up, it's just so much nicer, you know. And so both the consumption, the interaction with the content, the additional part of what we do every day, it just makes the iPad compelling.
Any final words before my takedown?
Yeah. So I'll give you a story. A short one. So I was in Japan with my wife on vacation, and as always, I would just take my iPad with me. But because in Tokyo there is this Ginza Apple store where they actually have an auditorium, I decided, you know, I'm on vacation, but maybe my wife will let me work for one day. So I asked the management of the Ginza Apple store if I could do an NOSBI event for our NOSBI users in Japan. They agreed. And we did an NOSBI event in Apple Store Ginza in the auditorium. Like 80 people, I think the whole thing is 80 people. It was full, it was packed. We sent invites to NOSBI users, so it was just in one day we had like everything was gone. So it was fantastic. And now, how the event was done. You love this one. So I had my iPad with my presentation in Keynote opened. I connected my iPad to the screen, I mean to whatever they provided there, to the screen to push my presentation, my Keynote presentation to the screen. In the same time, I had my iPad connect through audio jack to their audio, and I was calling via Skype to Poland, where our Japanese customer support representative was located. She was connected via Skype. So she was the iPad was holding the Skype call while I was doing the presentation the keynote presentation, and I would do the presentation and say things in English, and at the same time she would via Skype translate it simultaneously to Japanese. It was all handled by my small iPad. The Skype, the keynote, everything, it just worked, and then we're connected to everything. It was fantastic. It was a great iPad only experience.
And that was what, 2012?
It was 2013.
All right. Yeah. So ways back.
Yep.
But, you know, that to me is this thing. Like, I've seen you do some really impressive things on the iPad, but they're only impressive because of the assumption that it is not, quote unquote, a real computer. You know, a lot of the things that are impressive are things that are just common, that are just the way you expect things to work on the Mac. And that's, you know, that's part of my problem with the iPad, that the fact that it's smaller and more portable, lighter, is certainly an advantage, but in most contexts, not a huge advantage. Like there's a relatively small intersection where having a MacBook is too annoying, but the iPhone also can't do the job in between. It also, like, yeah, you're saying that it's more fun, and in many ways it is, but I don't like, for a computer, not for, you know, something I always have in my pocket, but for something to be like my main computer, as your iPad is to you, I don't want more fun. I want as fast as possible. And a lot of things on the iPad are either not possible yet. Sure, a lot more things are possible than used to be just, you know, 2 years ago. I'll acknowledge that. But a lot of things are still not possible or just difficult to do, more difficult than on a Mac. So, you know, the fact that you could handle all of this in 2013 on an iPad is impressive. But if you had, you know, today's MacBook One, which is not that much bigger, like, it would be obvious that you can do it. It wouldn't be a big deal. It would be just like you're using your computer, right?
So, yeah. Totally. I mean, the Mac is powerful, plenty powerful. The Mac is cool. You know, there are things you can do on the Mac. But what I loved about switching to the iPad was the fact that I actually spent so much time working on the computer. I prefer it to be really fun. Anyway, that's the first thing. Second thing, I want this to be portable because I like being portable. I like going to cafes and work on cafes. I like, you know, going around. So for me, this is really a key. And what I also like is constrain myself. And, you know, and we know that focus is right on one of the most important things that we need right now. And very often, I think these powerful computers, like, very often we don't need that much power that you say. You know, we don't need a super fast processor. Like, some people need that, and I appreciate that. But for example, I don't need super processing power. What I need is a focused environment where I can get my work done. And of course, iPad is not for everyone. But for arguably many more people, it can be one of the main computing devices for them if they let it, you know, be. And it does require switching the mindset. It does require switching, you know, this paradigm from files to apps, you know, to having everything in the cloud. It requires a lot of changes. That's why people very often say, well, I just, you know, I left for vacation, you know, with an iPad, and I'm not as productive as on the Mac. Of course, if you haven't configured it, if you haven't, you know, given it some thought, then of course not. But on the other hand, if you would do that, you would find that there are so many, you know, you would discover so many new apps, so many new ways of getting things done, and so many actually more focused ways of getting things done. Then you would appreciate them. So anyway, for me, this switch made me rethink the way I think about computer. And now I'm actually a better Mac user because I'm an iOS user, I think.
All right. So what I will acknowledge is that you're right. iOS and the iPad is a different paradigm. So a lot of things are just different, right? So you have to expect that switching to an iPad or using an iPad instead of a Mac is going to be different, right? And a lot of things are also different because of the touch interface. So
yes,
you have to relearn your habits, learn new tools, learn new apps, learn new ways of interacting with the operating system, and new ways of combining tools for complex tasks. That is just to be expected. I also acknowledge that iOS got a lot better with kind of productivity stuff and will get better. iOS 9 brought us split screen. We got proper keyboard shortcuts. iOS 11 brought us much better multitasking, drag and drop, the files app, the file picker, screen recording, all sorts of little things that were just missing that used to be impossible, really annoying to do on iOS are now easy. And, you know, also things like better physical keyboards, pencil, more will come over time. So, you know, that's fine. There's a lot of things that you cannot do yet, but there's no fundamental reason why iPad couldn't handle it, right?
That's correct.
There are also some things that the Mac just cannot do or is just not designed to do. There are some things where the direct manipulation with the screen is just perfect, and it would be very unwieldy on a Mac. Like you mentioned, annotation. That's a small use case, but there are more like this, mm-hmm. where being able to directly manipulate with what's on the screen is really great. Things that require the camera or other sensors like gyroscope, accelerometer. There are some things which are, you know, not just toys, but things you'd expect to do on a computer that you can do on an iPad that you just cannot do on a Mac, or it's just never going to be very good on the Mac.
Yeah, and several interfaces of several apps with multi-touch, for example, when they leverage multi-touch, it's something that, you know, it's hard to replicate on a Mac.
Yeah. I also do think that iPad probably will replace laptops for a lot of people. Like, a lot of people just don't need what PCs/Macs can offer. They just don't need the extra capability. And there are obvious advantages to iPad in the sense that it's simpler. The barrier of entry is easier. There's no, again, overlapping windows. There's no directly accessible file system, which is like hard to understand for a lot of people. It's just harder to get wrong. And it's small, light, portable. You can just touch with your finger. That's great. Here's where my kind of skepticism comes in terms of treating an iPad as kind of a real computer, as something that the Mac competes with. And it doesn't have to do with the things that you cannot do yet, but, you know, again, fundamentally, there's no reason why you couldn't do it. It's just that, you know, you mentioned how a lot of things are more fun to do on an iPad. But in the context of using it as a kind of a real computer, as a productivity tool, I don't, you know, it's not that important for me that it's fun to do it. I just want as fast as possible, right? There's a lot of things that are possible on iPad or on iOS, even on an iPhone, but I feel like they're just not as fast, and they're not going to be as fast as on a Mac. And things being fast is kind of fun when you can just do things super quickly. And some of that is what you said, keyboard shortcuts. And that's getting better. And again, now that's something that iOS can do, though doesn't yet take advantage of it. But in terms of like direct manipulation with the screen, like the screen is small. Compared to what you can have on the Mac, and because you it's designed so you can use it with your finger, the top targets have to be relatively large. So it just inherently limits the kind of your resolution of interaction with the device. So it's really difficult to put a lot of things on the screen, which makes it simple, makes it easier, but it also means that things that on the Mac you designed to just be all available to you, like on iOS you have to do extra taps, you have to do just extra work to get to the same stuff, right? In the context of programmers, and especially, there's been this talk for a long time how getting a big screen has a direct impact on your productivity. Now, That's writing code is a very specific use case. That's not why I'm skeptical to some extent about iPad for work, but it's just there's a lot to gain from having a large screen and a precision pointing device like a mouse or a trackpad and a real physical keyboard you can type with very quickly and with a very small, very low error rate, which is not necessarily true on iOS. And the other thing is that the model, the paradigm of iOS also can be limiting in fundamental ways. Like the thing that makes it great also limits it. So everything has to go through the App Store, and it's difficult for anyone to imagine that Apple changes that. And that just means that a lot of things that you can do on the Mac, you cannot do on iOS, because unless Apple approves it, and there's a bunch of stuff they're just not going to approve, it's just not going to happen, and you will have no way to use it. Like that it's inherently kind of unhackable. And on a Mac, you have a lot more leeway to make it, you know, serve the purposes you need it to serve. And because of a kind of less strict security model, which is, again, a great feature of iOS, but it also makes it more difficult for apps to interact with each other very directly.
Yeah, so very valid points. And you make a valid point, especially from point of view of a programmer and a geek, right? And the person who really cares about this stuff and cares about, you know, like lots of the, you know, nuts and bolts of the Mac. And on the iPad, you don't have these nuts and bolts very often, or they're just covered and they are not accessible to you. So yeah, but in the grand scheme of things, I think the iPad is reaching this moment, or it's going to reach this moment at some point, but I think it's going there. With the analogy of Steve Jobs, the trucks and the cars, like not exactly trucks, but I would say, you know, specialized cars and just, you know, mainstream cars. And because for me, what was just what was and what is still surprising is that even for a person like me, who is a geek as well, but who is right now a CEO of a company, like I can really get most of my stuff done on the iPad, and I can do them very efficiently and you know, as I mentioned, with lots of fun in between. So and that's what I wanted to highlight, that, you know, even for like a use case like mine, I can still, you know, I can really already get lots done. Another thing that you haven't mentioned, that we haven't mentioned in this show, is the fact that, for example, as a programmer, what you would normally do is you would set up like your local dev environment on your computer. So, for example, on a Mac, you know, you would set up your own server, your own, like, you know, things. And I would always do that as well. And I remember when I was trying to set up my server on an iPad, which is impossible, I was frustrated. It wasn't possible. But then I realized, why don't I outsource the server to the server, actually, you know, and just set up a dev server somewhere else and use it, you know, through the internet, because my iPad is connected to the internet all the time, apart from being on an airplane sometimes. So this way I can develop on the iPad, save it, and then just, you know, run it on the server, which is outside. And so I can really outsource the computing power when I need it. And right now with, you know, EC2, like with the Amazon cloud and all these things, you can actually, you know, outsource lots of computing power, and you don't need it locally. You can, you know, execute it on the servers. So so I was surprised that it actually worked, and I just set up my environment outside of my iPad and was still, you know, coding.
Yeah, I mean, you can do it for some web stuff, for sure, but it's just very limiting, and you know, putting it in the cloud is a hack. Like that's one of the things. I mean, sure, writing code is very like specialized exactly. thing, so it's understandable that iPad isn't built for that, and I don't expect it to, but it just it's kind of fundamental security model and just the model of the OS doesn't allow you to it just doesn't work with the way developer tools are built, the way the developers need you know, the capabilities of the OS developers need, the access to the OS developers need to just have their tools set up, and not just in some limited way that some app created, like there's Coda, light and stuff like that, but just the way you need to.
Yeah, I totally agree. Although my IDE on the iPad is actually better than the one I have on the Mac. So, well, anyway, the thing is, what I was arguing with my book iPad only years ago, and what I'm arguing now still, is that with a right mindset, more people could be using an iPad as their main computer than they think, right? Like than we think. So yeah, I mean, I won't argue that, you know, for some reasons, as you mentioned, you know, the cursor, like things, you know, access to some, you know, like I won't argue with any of what you said. You need these workflows. You need these specialized ways of using the computer. So I would argue that. And I argue that, of course, I also have some fun using my iMac from time to time and having it here, you know, with a big screen and stuff. I like it. But because I made the switch to the iPad, I realized I can get things done on an iPad. I can get them very well done. And I want to argue that many more people could do that and would actually work better, would have the constraints on them right there because they are by default there. So they would, I think, work more productively, have more deep work, as we discussed before. So really, I and have more fun in, you know, in the process. So I think, you know, I would challenge people to try to set this up and you know, follow, you know, my blog post on my blog or the book or whatever, like there, or just go to Vitici's website. So, although Vitici is, you know, he's, I love Federico, but he's, you know, he's very, you know, like very, very technological about it. And for the beginners, it might be just too much. But on the other hand, once you're reached that level, you know, you want Vitici's Mac stories. So anyway, it's funny that his thing is called Mac stories. It could be iPads. It should be iPad stories anyway. yeah. But anyway, that's what I'm saying. That I think, and that's why I was arguing with my book years ago. Many more people would be could be using the iPad, and for much more, like for, like, you know, 70-80% of their stuff could be done on the iPad in very similar way, if not even more productive way than on the Mac. And I think, you know, as we discussed, new entrants to computers, like people who haven't, you know, been using computers, very often the iPad is the only one computer that they need to get things done.
Yeah, the thing you said about something being their main computer, I think it's true, but also the problem with that for now, we'll see how that evolves in the future, but for now is that there really is a lot of things that are impossible or just really hard to do on an iPad, and few people are, you know, geeks like us that would want to have both an iPad Pro with like treating this as their main computer, and, you know, some PC on a or a Mac that for, you know, to use sometimes for the things they needed to. But, you know, we'll see how that evolves.
Yeah, I mean, I remember my main complaint when I was using the iPad, like initially, was, for example, that I couldn't record the video calls, right? Mm. Because I couldn't. But now, for example, we use Zoom to record this. I mean, we record locally, but we use Zoom to see each other. And right now, again, I can use Zoom to record in the cloud. So I can just invoke video recording in Zoom on the iPad, and it records the video recording and it's stored in the cloud. So again, I'm outsourcing things to the cloud, and I can still record the video, which is cool. Anyway, I'm curious, because we're ordering an iPad for you. So I'm curious how much you will be doing on the iPad, and how you will, you know, configure your iPad, and how how much use you'll get out of it. Because I've seen you, you know, playing with the iPad several times. You know, you have an iPad Mini. You know, tinkering with the thought of maybe doing some more on the iPad. So I'm just really curious, you know, how your journey is going to go.
Well, I guess you just spoiled it. I actually was in my reseller store here in my city, and I was playing with the new iPads. And the 120 hertz thing is just amazing. It's so smooth. And the latency of the pencil is just incredible. So, yep, I am getting an iPad Pro. I am skeptical about the idea that it would actually be superior or beneficial to me to try to do more things on an iPad outside of kind of consumption of media, which is what I do with my iPad Mini right now. But I feel like we got to the point with the new iPad hardware and iOS 11 that it's worth a try. Because even if the iPad cannot replace a Mac for me, if it can replace a Mac or a PC for a lot of people, then that's something I should be concerned with as someone who makes software.